Girls who don't bemoan the way they look, to speak up for themselves, to feel like they have a valued place in society. After years of talk about building girls' self-images and bearing witness to several women in leadership positions around the globe, how far have we come? These issues were propelled into the national news when local teen Julia Bloom and her peers spoke out against 17 Magazine's use of photos that alter girl models' appearances. Her petition to the magazine stirred up excitement nationwide and renewed the conversation about how we currently treat girls in the media. Our guests today include Waterville teen Julia Bloom and her friend and collaborator Izzy Labby, as well as two experts in girls' issues, Dr. Lynn Michael Brown, a professor of education and human development at Colby College, and Megan Williams, a sociologist who is president of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. Today, promoting, supporting, and demanding positive images and respect for girls. This is Maine Calling. And welcome. I'm Suzanne Nance, and you can send your comments and questions in to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling. You can post a comment on our Facebook page, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. Again, it's 1-800-399-3566. And I'd like to start with our eighth graders from Waterville Junior High right off the bat, Julia and Izzy. First of all, let me thank you for both taking a moment from your schoolwork to talk about this important issue and also share your recent experiences that made big time news. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So your actions and the result of your actions are really why we're here today discussing this specific topic. Julia, I wonder if you could read for us the petition, or at least part of the petition that you created and helped create in hopes of making a change at 17 Magazine.
Yeah, I'll just read one of the most important paragraphs in it.
Great.
So, to girls today, the word pretty means skinny and blemish-free. Why is that, when so few girls actually fit into such a narrow category? It's because the media tells us that pretty girls are impossibly thin with perfect skin. Here's what a lot of girls don't know. Those pretty women that we see in magazines are fake. They're often photoshopped, airbrushed, edited to look thinner and appear like they have perfect skin. A girl you see in a magazine probably looks a lot different in real life. As part of the Spark movement, a girl-fueled national activist movement, I've been fighting to stop magazines, toy companies, and other big businesses from creating products, photo spreads, and ads that hurt girls and break our self-esteem. With Spark, I've learned that we have the power to fight back.
Great. Let's talk about Spark and what led up to the writing of that petition and what happened once it started circulating, Julia.
Well, at Spark, we talk a lot about how Photoshop is used in the media and how hurtful it can be to girls. And we wanted to do something about it. So I thought it'd be good if we started a petition that targeted something that girls look at all the time, like magazines, like 17.
Mm-hmm. And how did your peers react?
A lot of my friends were really excited and really supportive, and like Izzy's here, she did a lot to help me too. She can talk about the video that she helped me make in the lunchroom at school.
Yeah, Izzy, let's talk about that video. Tell us what you did.
Well, I got the idea that it was just us. It was just me and Julia talking about the petition, and I figured people might not just listen to a bunch of girls who are part of a feminist movement, that we should go and talk to other people who aren't necessarily part of activist groups like this. So Julia brought a 17 magazine to school, and we just went around one day at lunch with permission from a teacher and just talked to kids and videotaped it on my school laptop, and then we put it on YouTube after some editing, and it's gotten a pretty good response from people.
Mm-hmm. What are the toughest things about being a teenage girl today?
I think there's a lot of pressure to have people like you and appreciate you, because if you feel like if nobody likes you, then like what's the point? Like, you want people to respect you and like you, and a lot of times we think that for people to like us, we have to be a certain way, and we have to look a certain way to be, appreciated or thought highly of, and that's not true.
I'd like to invite Megan Williams to join us at this point in the conversation. Megan, as we heard earlier, is a sociologist and the president of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. First of all, what is Hardy Girls Healthy Women?
Well, thanks for having us. Hardy Girls is a Waterville-based nonprofit. We do programming for girls in 2nd through 12th grade, serve over 600 girls a year, and we're really focused on empowering girls with knowledge, critical thinking skills, and a platform to do the kind of social change work that both Izzy and Julia have done here with 17 Magazine.
That's great. And so what I enjoyed about reading your blog, and what was interesting to me, I should say, is that you made the point after all of this blew up in the media that this is not a singular girl in America who is feeling badly about the way these images are portrayed and how they make her feel. But this is a global issue. And the media sort of added insult to injury by taking that sexy spin on things and saying, this is one girl. So I enjoyed your blog about that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, what you know is that a lot of girls are having the feelings that Izzy and Julia are having, where they're confused by this, you know, this idea that there is just this one kind of perfect girl. And I think the fact that, you know, over 78,000 people have signed on to the petition that Julia and Izzy have created speaks to the fact this is not just one single girl who has one, you know, who has an issue with 17 Magazine. This is, she's, you know, speaking sort of on behalf of and with the support of girls from all around the country who are feeling the same way. And that's exactly what both Spark and Hardy Girls are trying to create is a place where Julia and Izzy can feel like they have the support and to push back against this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome Dr. Lynn Michael Brown, who is also joining us this morning. Dr. Brown is professor of education and human development at Colby. She writes extensively on the relational life of girls, the influences of race, class, and gender on girls' lives, the impact of media and girls' feelings of anger, self-knowledge, loss, hope, and desire. Thanks for being with us. We are talking, of course, about girls and self-image. Where are we in making progress? It seems that from women's lib to feminism to girl power, the same basic issues concerning girls and their self-image and their place in society keep coming up. But what's different now and what has not changed?
Well, we're in a funny place, right? Because we have amazing girls like Izzy and Julia doing amazing activist work. At the same time, we have a kind of corporate culture and a media culture that it seems to be all the time narrowing, you know, their options and choices, giving them the illusion of many choices and many items to buy, but in fact sort of framing, you know, beauty, as Julia and Izzy are saying, and sort of acceptance and love around a very narrow set of images. So girls who don't have the kind of support and critical thinking skills that Julia and Izzy have, you know, received through Hardy Girls and Spark, you know, really sort of come up against this and really struggle with these issues. So girl power itself has been so co-opted by the media to be the power to be a little consumer, you know, to be a shopper, to, you know, be sexy and hot, to have boyfriends, that, you know, girls, again, who don't have that sort of support really can struggle against those images.
Yeah, we were talking about girl power briefly before we went on the air, and before we asked the girls on the line here what they think about girl power. I'll just give the phone number again. Please share your comments, ask your questions, your experiences. The number to call is 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can also email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at maincalling, or post your comment on our Facebook page. So girl power, I looked it up. And the Oxford English Dictionary added the term girl power in 2001, defining this phrase as power exercised by girls, a self-reliant attitude among girls and young women manifested in ambition, assertiveness, and individualism. But Lynn, as you just mentioned,
right,
you know, this term, this girl power, is used to sell cosmetics and promote diets to our young women and to women alike. And also, it was really popularized by the band The Spice Girls.
Right. What's so interesting is the date of that definition because in the late sort of 90s and, you know, just around that time when the kind of Riot Girls had come on the scene and were really demanding that girls be taken seriously and have power. I mean, it's that kind of feistiness that got created as a kind of consumer image of sort of sexy and hot, meaning feisty or sassy, and that was, you know, embodied by the Spice Girls, you know. So that's the kind of image of girl power that got picked up and sold by the media, because that's something that's sellable, right? I mean, real girl power to change the culture, not so sellable.
Absolutely. Julie and Izzy, how do you feel about the term girl power?
Well, I think it's a little bit ironic, as Lynn said, that they would, you know, market it as something that's supposed to be so empowering when in reality it's just used to sell sex. So I think it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I think it's kind of disappointing. It sends the message that, you know, girls have power, but that power is limited to being hot and sexy. And it's, you know, it doesn't make me feel very good knowing that people, that it makes me think that that's what people want me to be and that's all that people want me to be, when girls are capable of so much more.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about being sexy and that fine line that that we walk in promoting self-confidence. Girls who love their bodies and don't mind wearing shorter shorts and lower cut tops versus the fact that because they might be wearing that clothes, some would argue that they are promoting themselves as sexual objects. So how do we balance that? Confidence, feeling good and celebrating your body, and not being objectified.
Well, the whole notion of sort of love your body, I mean, even that kind of concept has been picked up by Victoria's Secret, of the whole campaign around that. So love your body means love a certain kind of body, which is highly sexualized. And Victoria's Secret even uses the word aspirational to sell their lingerie to younger girls. So, I mean, the language, the way it's all been co-opted. So I feel like, you know, girls are in a really, as you said, it's a very tricky place to be. Right? I mean, to sort of, that the whole setup is designed to create anxiety and a feeling of failure, because who can match up to that body? Nobody, right? We're all going to fail. So that's, of course, the attraction. That's why media use this kind of imagery, because if we feel anxious, then we'll buy a product to reduce the anxiety. But what it does is present girls with, a very narrow construction of sexy. One of the things that Spark is trying to do is take back sexy to mean a kind of, you know, embodiment, to be sexual and have a kind of a sexual sense of self, meaning kind of a fully embodied, present, you know, vocal, you know, the whole package, rather than this narrow sexualized image that girls are presented.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to some calls in just a moment. The number to call is 1-800-399-3566. But first, what happened? What did 17 agree to do? Julia, Izzy, do you want to comment?
Well, we met with Ann Schockett, the editor-in-chief of 17, and we had a really great conversation about what we want to see in magazines. We haven't really heard anything back from them yet. We're still hoping they'll do something, but if they don't, we also want to reach out to other magazines and work on educating girls about how much Photoshop is used and how we can pick it out when we see it.
Mm-hmm. It's also starting to, like, make people aware. Like, a lot of times before, people look at magazines and not realize that it's Photoshopped, but I think because we've started this issue and it's gotten so much publicity and stuff, people are actually starting to realize that magazines Photoshop things.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that 75,000 people signed the petition?
I was very surprised, but at the same time, it makes sense, because I know there are a lot of girls, and not just girls, parents and friends out there who feel the same way that I do and are having the same kind of problems. So I was surprised that so many people signed my petition, but I wasn't surprised that so many people agreed.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Let's take a call from Jen in Portland. Hi, Jen. Hi, Jen. Are you there with us?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
First of all, the young ladies talking are amazing, and I just want to congratulate them both on taking such a tough stand, and, you know, my heart goes out to them. I think they're incredible role models for all young girls. And to that end, they really sound like Girls on the Run, which is a new nonprofit in Maine that is a preventative program that encourages preteen girls to develop self-respect and healthy lifestyles through running. And we're really excited. A group of us have been working very hard for about 7 months to bring the program to Maine. Mm-hmm. It's an after-school program that addresses many, if not all, of these issues that these young ladies are addressing themselves. And the curriculum itself does so through creatively integrating running. So it incorporates both the mind and the body in terms of being confident and strong and empowered.
Right.
And we're first launching a site this fall in Portland. So we're really excited. And so I just wanted to mention that because your program talks about what can we do.
Right.
You know, what specifically can we do for these young girls, especially the preteen age, before they hit middle school, before they really sort of go into what Molly Barker, the founder of Girls on the Run, called
right.
the Girl Box.
And I think you're right, Jen. I think you're right. I think people can find these programs and these opportunities if they look. They are there, and I want to thank you for your call. Coming up, we're going to hear from Frederick in South Portland, who has strong feelings about equality and wants to hear what you would request of fathers and brothers and men. So we'll take that call in a minute. First, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call this number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Mistakes happen. We are human.
This high school in California's Silicon Valley combines academic rigor with religious devotion.
You are a Muslim, you are American, and you need to be proud of both, and you need to be able to bring those two together.
It's a private Islamic high school, and it's giving children of Muslim families a safe place for study. We visit next time on The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
MPBN continues its series of primary debates this Thursday night with the Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate, and we'd like you to take part. If you have a question for Cynthia Dill, Matt Dunlap, John Hink, and Benjamin Pollard, please submit it to mpbn.net/yourvote. And then tune in at 8 o'clock to learn more about their views and what sets each candidate apart. It's Your Voice, Your Vote on MPBN. We hope you'll join us.
Join us for this Your Vote 2012 debate Thursday evening at 8 and again Friday evening at 9 on MPBN television and Friday afternoon at 1 here on MPBN radio. Submit your question for the candidates at mpbn.net/yourvote.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Suzanne Nance. Today we're talking about how girls and how women view themselves. With me in the studio, Dr. Lynn Michael Brown, Professor of Education and Human Development at Colby College, and Megan Williams, Sociologist and President of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. On the line with us are Julia Bloom and Izzy Labby. They are eighth graders active in girls' issues. We'd like you to join our conversation as we as a society are promoting unhealthy, or are we promoting unattainable images of young women? Share your thoughts. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I want to get to this call from South Portland. Frederick is talking about strong feelings for equality. Frederick, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Suzanne and guests. But first, initially, do I detect a branching out of your wonderful capabilities at MPBN, Suzanne?
I'm not sure. I'm happy to be filling in for Keith Shortall today, who does such a marvelous job. But this issue is important to me, and I'm happy to be sitting in this chair.
Well, I'm glad. It's wonderful to hear you in the afternoon. And I have to say that I'm proud to self-identify as a feminist. I don't know really how well I do, but I think I do with a house full of stepdaughters and a couple of step-granddaughters. Mm. And I think it's important for men to take responsibility and honor and calm our ego and honor our sisters in life. And I wanted to encourage listeners and the men in the audience to speak to this and to really hear what our sisters have to say this afternoon. So what I'd like to hear from you now is how do you, I also wanted to concur that we need to address the power structure which white men have, and that's another complete conversation, that what you're talking about, girls not having power, is that we white men have an inordinate amount of power, and it has not done us nor women and our culture and our country well to be in such a competitive place in life rather than a cooperative, loving place. So with that being said, I'd like to hear the gals address me and other men. What would you say is like the key takeaway for us men, regardless of where our hearts and minds are?
Great. Thank you, Frederick. Lynn?
Well, I really appreciate your comments. I couldn't agree more. I think the, you know, I think girls who are really sort of active and sort of aware of these issues of inequality tend to have experiences that with in families or in sort of kind of communities where there's an inequality of relationship. And so they have practice, they have role models, they have examples. At Hardy Girls, we work very closely, actually, with a brother organization called Boys to Men in Portland to really think about those issues so that we present with them and we try to model the kind of work that we're doing. I don't know, Megan, if you'd want to add to that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first of all, I want to thank Frederick for self-identifying as a feminist. It's so nice to hear men say that. And second of all, you know, we know that research exists that shows that girls who have a healthy relationship with their father, a strong relationship with their father, are more likely to be independent, economically self-sufficient, and less likely to be in abusive relationships. And those are all things that Hardy Girls is working to combat, so or to support. And so, you know, I would echo what Lynn said in terms of we need to be doing this work in partnership with boys and men, and that's why we're so proud to partner with Boys to Men, and why we're happy to support and give opportunities for girls to have great experiences with their fathers as well.
Mm-hmm. And to bring that back to the 17 issue, there's a wonderful blog up right now at sparkmovement.org by Ben Ubinas, who is a boy, I think, in high school, who's supporting the girls and saying, you know, as a boy, those images don't appeal to him either. And to have his voice is really wonderful, to have his, you know, participation in Spark.
Let's get back to the phones. We're getting quite a few calls, and I'll give the number again in case you want your voice to be heard and your comment to be heard today, or if you have a question, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Laurie from Winterport called in about the term girl power. Hi, Laurie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm the proud mother of four daughters. And my youngest daughter used to play on the baseball team for our rec league, not softball, but baseball. She and two other girls were the only girls in the league in Winterport. And we used the term girl power to reinforce the fact that they were every bit as good, and they were, as the boys. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a rallying term around our team. And we've always just taught our girls that it was... It's not the outer beauty that's important. It's the whole inside and out. And if they're strong, everybody has different strengths, and we work with the strengths. But girl power was not necessarily considered a negative thing in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we always have to take those terms back and use them in the way that makes the most sense for us. And I think in that sense, it sounds amazing. The problem is when the media co-opts, you know, our understanding of what powerful girls are into products that sort of narrow their options or make it more difficult for them to have real power in the world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laurie. Let's go to Bangor, where Joyce is calling in. Hi, Joyce.
Oh, hi, Suzanne. Thank you. And first, I want to applaud these young women for taking the stand they've taken and being able to, you know, carry it to a place that I think will really make an impact. And I wanted to make the point that we own a clothing store for women, and these issues carry on for women forever, it seems. And so many women, you know, older women have so many issues about their bodies, and it can be just so disheartening.
Yeah.
And so last year we kind of took the stand and we took down all the photos we had in our dressing rooms of models and products, and we took photos of just people buying clothing and what they looked like and pasted them around our dressing rooms. And this got like such a positive response from women. It was like, wow, you know, that's me. That could be me. You know, that's reality. And, you know, just even that one small step I felt like just made such an impact. So I think this is an issue that, you know, we as women all continue to struggle with. And I applaud you for taking it on. And you've motivated me to try and do more as well.
Great, great. Applauding you right back, Joyce. Thanks for your call from Bangor. Let's talk a little bit. I'm going to give the number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. That's a great point. She's doing her part in her store to try and help promote healthy, normal, natural images for women. What can we do? What can parents do? What can teachers do? What can we do in society to really help with this cause?
Well, I think it's so important to support the creative sort of ideas of girls like Issy and Julia. I mean, one of the things that we can do as adults is to really engage with girls and to support them. You know, rather than to try to protect them from this problem or solve the problem for them, give them the resources and the skills and the training to sort of come up with these ideas like Julia and Issy have done, and then really do what we can to create a platform so that more and more people hear about it. I think our first reaction often as parents is to overprotect. I think girls are amazing in doing this work themselves.
Mm-hmm. Care to comment, Megan?
Yeah, I would just add that I think it's important for we as women to be careful about what we say and how we act. And I think, you know, comments about how, you know, we don't feel good about ourselves that day or how we were so bad that we ate that cookie are things that you know, girls in our lives hear and they model. And so if we as women can be just careful about what kind of messages we're sending and the things that we do and the things that we say, then that goes a long way towards setting a great example for girls. I would also add that action in Bangor is just an amazing example of local activism. One of the projects that Hardy Girls did last year was the Dressing Room Project, which was to download these positive messages and to go into retail stores and hang them on the mirrors to sort of reinforce that girls come in all shapes and sizes and you're beautiful the way that you are. And those just, you know, small acts can have a great impact across, you know, across the population.
Yeah, along the lines of what you're talking about, Lee is calling in from Turner. Lee, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I would absolutely agree with your last comments. I'm very fortunate to come from a family of maiden German aunts and grandmothers and mothers who were all phenomenal athletes and stunningly beautiful women. And I never knew that the world wasn't controlled by strong, beautiful, athletic German women. And I turned 21 and found out differently. But what I learned from them is I have an obligation as a sister, as an aunt, as someone who works with college-age students to model the things that I want them to learn. So appropriate language, appropriate dress, and to be genuine so that the person that they see professionally is also the person that I am. And to do it with children that you see around you as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
To make it part of your goal of what you do every day. I was stunned years ago when a bunch of students said to me that I wasn't a feminist.
Why did that stun you? You really considered yourself to be a feminist?
Yes, I can't imagine anything about me that doesn't scream that.
Why do you think they said that? Why do you think they said that?
I have mostly male students in my classes, and I think it was the opposite negative image that a feminist couldn't be a great athlete, good looking, you know, dressed professionally, and be equal to the students in my classroom, regardless of whether they were male or female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really got me thinking more and more about what I need to be doing to send the right messages.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for your comment. Izzy and Julia, where do you look for good role models, or who are your role models?
Well, I know a lot of really amazing people in my life who I look up to. Some of them are in my ballet class. Some of them are teachers. And also, when I went to New York City, I was able to meet a bunch of really awesome activists who have done things with their lives to stand up for what they believe in, like Shelby Knox and Dana Adele, who's the director of Spark. And they really inspire me because I love looking at all what they have accomplished and knowing that, you know, I could do something like that someday.
I think of people in my family, especially my mom, and then there are my friends who I think are all pretty good role models for people. And especially the Spark team, too, because when I went for the Spark Summit in New York last year, I met them all, and I was just thinking, like, wow, these women are awesome. Mm. You know, they're just so proud of the way they look. They're not afraid to talk about things about themselves that may be considered imperfections. And they're just so, you know, they're just so good with making other people, like giving other people a good role model. And I think that's really inspirational.
Yeah. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another short break, and when we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
The pioneering bluegrass country and folk guitar player, singer, and songwriter Doc Watson has died at the age of 89. Widely regarded as the single greatest flat-picking guitar player in America, he was highly influential during the folk music revival. Doc Watson was recognized by a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award and was awarded a National Medal of Arts by Bill Clinton. This evening on Fresh Air, we'll hear an interview and studio performance with Doc Watson. That's this evening at 7 o'clock here on MPBN Radio. And join us at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling, for It's Your World. The guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning author and former New York Times foreign correspondent David Shipler, who discusses the erosion of civil liberties in the U.S. Long before the attacks of September 11, 2001, the rights and civil liberties guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution have been challenged by legal compromises made in the name of national security. Shipler explains how our rights to privacy and justice have been undermined, what we've lost in the process, and how much we stand to regain by protesting the recent departures from the Bill of Rights. That's It's Your World. The guest is David Shipler at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Suzanne Nance, and you're listening to Maine Calling here on MPBN. Today on the program, promoting healthy self-images for girls and young women, we're speaking with Julia Bloom and Izzy Lebby. They are students at Waterville Junior High who are active in girls' issues. Julia led a petition drive to get 17 Magazine to stop photoshopping its models. Also with us, Dr. Lynn Michael Brown, Professor of Education and Human Development at Colby College, and Megan Williams, sociologist and president of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. And let's get back to the conversation. Lynn, you mentioned that one thing parents can do is connect girls with other girls. And a great example of that is Lizzie and Julia.
Yeah, I mean, I think when parents are looking for ways to really support girls, I mean, it's so important to find those places that, as Izzy and Julie are both talking about, how incredible the Spark team is. They're one of many. And there are a lot of girls, different ages, very diverse in terms of race, and all engaged in this activity together. And then they're learning from a next generation of young feminists. And so bringing girls together and then training and scaffolding them, because I think any girl has the capability to be an activist, but no girl can do this alone without other kinds of support and other kinds of information. And so providing that for them, providing those spaces, is what it's all about.
Great. We received an email from Sarah Henches, Assistant Professor of American Studies at University of Maine at Augusta-Bangor campus, and she wrote in to thank you for being here, ladies and girls, to do the Girl Power Show on Maine Calling, and also mentioned that she's teaching an online course this summer and every summer through the University of Maine at Augusta called American Girls, Identity, Culture, and Empowerment. And that course draws students, mostly women, from all over Maine. Thank you, Sarah, for that email. I want to go to West Paris because Terry is calling in about her tomboy daughter. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm the other kind of
him.
Terry. I'm a male Terry.
You know, as soon as I said that, I thought, I bet you this is a man. Well, welcome, Mr. Terry.
Thank you very much. I would just like to say to the guests you have that I'm really proud of what they're doing. My daughter grew up with horses with the U.S. Pony Club, and for some reason that's mainly a female domain. And during that, 14 years, she was involved up until last summer. She was acquainted with many, many strong and independent and, you know, self-actualized women, and it was nice to see her grow up that way. And after she graduated from Skowhegan Area High School, she interviewed with the U.S. Forest Service and is now in California as a smoke jumper, those crazy people who jump out of perfectly good planes to fight forest fires. I couldn't be prouder of her.
Excellent. Wow. Thank you, Terry.
She sounds amazing.
She sure does.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jeannie from Camden. Jeannie, welcome.
Hello.
Hi there. What's your comment? You had concerns about the designers of clothing.
Yes, I just think apart from the airbrushing, it's what these girls have to put on. And we go to the top of the designers, and I wonder how many designers or design teams are male, and do they have children, and is this the message that they'd like their own, you know, maybe perhaps 2-year-old or 3-year-old when the time comes when they're 15, when they're 13, 14, and 15 to be wearing. So perhaps our girls can become new design teams and put clothes on that are appropriate and beautiful, but not necessarily so sexual.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think the fact that exactly what Hardy Girls and Spark are trying to do is to try to encourage girls to create something that they would want to see or do or wear or whatever. And the process of creating your own media or creating your own fashion or creating something the sort of counter-cultural is an empowering and an important process for girls to be able to go through. And the girls at Spark, for example, are creating their own media by blogging, and they're getting their opinions out there, they're getting their criticisms of the sort of pop culture media out there. And that in and of itself, it can be empowering. So I would love to see more girls getting into designing clothes and creating something that girls can be comfortable and active in. And we hear a lot about that from parents who have young daughters who, you know, who they want to, you know, to be able to play and, you know, in the dirt. And you can't do that in a, you know, frilly sort of pink tutu and high heels,
right?
Which is a lot of what you can find these days.
Right. It's interesting because we've come a long way. We used to deal with corsets and high heels were the norm. And dresses, of course, were always the norm. When would a woman wear a pantsuit into work? Mm-hmm. But, of course, now there are different issues that you're addressing. Girls, I wonder, Julia and Izzy, I wonder if you could talk about finding clothing that makes you feel good about yourself. And also if you could tell us who is the biggest offender in your mind for promoting an unhealthy image.
Well, I shop at kind of regular stores like Forever 21 and H&M and stuff like that. But the clothes that I wear aren't a lot like the clothes that other girls in our school wear. There is just this huge group of girls that wear really tight, short skirts. And we're a little bit concerned because, they all wear them, and we're pretty sure it's not because they all think they're cute, but maybe because they want the attention of boys. But I think that the biggest offender is probably the reason why, and it's probably like Paris Hilton or something. I mean, the girls that they see in like tabloid magazines wearing clothes like that and getting all the guys and being rich and famous and beautiful in the media standards, which are, I mean, it's probably why they're going home and saying, I want to look like that, then I'll get all of the attention I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there are a lot of girls at our school who wear different things, and I think if you're wearing whatever you want to wear because that's what you like and that's what you feel comfortable, and that's really great. Like, Izzy and I are actually both wearing dresses right now because we really like dresses, and we like wearing that sort of thing to school, and that's what we feel comfortable in. But at the same time, it's totally great if you wear, like, pants and stuff, too, because I wear pants a lot.
Absolutely. Pants, dresses, whatever you feel good in. I appreciate both of those comments. Let's go to Lori in Bar Harbor. Hi, Lori. Welcome.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I am actually in my car driving along listening to this wonderful program. And I want to thank these young women from the bottom of my heart. I'm so impressed with what you're doing. 30 years ago, I taught sexuality education at a school in New Hampshire. We had Jean Kilborn come to our school, and then we watched her film Killing Us Softly, and tried to educate teenagers, teenage girls, about the impact of media on everything that you all are talking about. And I felt that it was just a drop in the bucket, and that it's been a struggle for all of these years. And to turn the radio on and hear what you are doing has just filled me with hope, and I'm so excited for young women, and that we're in the computer age and that kids can blog. And if I were still teaching, my assignment would be to have them go to your website, to talk to you, to blog, and then write a paper. So thank you. I just thought it was really important to acknowledge Jean Kilborn for really starting this back probably in the late 70s and early 80s. And if you haven't seen that film, Killing Us Softly, I hope that you'll watch it. So thank you.
I just want to put a plug in for Jean Kilborn because she is a friend and the mother of this work. You're absolutely right. And her Killing Us Softly is now in its fourth edition, and she's also working with Spark as a partner, so she's very much involved in this work and has worked with Hardy Girls.
Yeah, and I would add that there are a ton of great educational resources like the film Killing Us Softly out there that parents, teachers, social workers can use to educate kids and adults alike about the pressures that both boys and girls feel from the media. And Hardy Girls has a fantastic lending library in Waterville. We'll send stuff to you, and folks can access that resource on our website, hghw.org.
Great. And I just want to briefly go to Tanya in Yarmouth, who I think is going to reiterate the importance of finding out what parents and teachers can do to help. Tanya, welcome. We've got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much. I just want to say, way to go, Izzy and Julia. You inspire me, and I thank you so much for your work. And I think that parents and other people of influence in the lives of girls should take advantage of what programs Hardy Girls Healthy Women have to offer, both in-person programs and anything they offer on their website, Powered by Girl, their own website. Don't miss Adventure Girls, which is a year-long program, and Girls Unlimited, that is once a year. And please donate to Hardy Girls Healthy Women so they can increase their programming all throughout the state. Go Hardy Girls!
Thank you, Tanya, very much. And I think that's
you.
A nice note to end on, don't you? You'll have to send her the check right
yes.
back.
Yes. Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks, Tanya. Julia, Izzy, Lynn, and Megan, thanks for joining us today. Lynn Brown is a professor of education and human development at Colby College. Megan Williams is president of Hardy Girls Healthy Women. Julia Bloom and Izzy Lebby are eighth grade students at Waterville Junior High. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith and our volunteer, Cindy Hahn. Cindy also answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. I'm Suzanne Nance. Keith Shortall will be back tomorrow. You've been listening to Maine Calling here on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.